Hello and welcome to episode 77 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
As ever, you can find the show notes for this episode over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk, where you can comment, and don't forget you can also tweet us via Nerds Podcast or find us on Facebook and Google Plus as Nerds Assemble Podcast. Plus, at the moment, we're running a short listener survey that we would really, really appreciate if you took some time to fill in. And when I say some time, it is a short bit of time because there are five very, 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 very short questions in this survey. And the link for that is in the episode notes over on the website.
Okay, and this week we will be discussing R.I.P. Harold Ramis, a new companion for Doctor Who, Irrational Games to close its doors, Guardians of the Galaxy trailer is released and people hope that to draw attention to Rocket Raccoon's co-creator. 40% of The Last of Us is audience is female, apparently. And for our feature, we're looking at TV Resurrected.
But first, the sad news that broke earlier this evening, like before we started recording, that unfortunately, Harold Ramis has passed away due to medical complications. Obviously, you know, thoughts are with his family and whatnot, but also just the fact that I think it's quite a loss for sort of Hollywood, at least on sort of like the side of comedy and everything, because he's kind of, he's not old school comedy writer, but he was, put it this way, he's a lot different to somebody like Adam Sandler, you know, that kind of crowd when it comes to comedy. To be fair,
I have to admit, I think when I was a kid, I think Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters 2 used to be my favourite, well, at least a couple of my favourite, you know, films.
So that's kind of because they're awesome.
Yes.
Because they're classics.
And now I need to really make a point of rewatching Groundhog Day, which he wrote and directed as well. So, you know, I mean, I've enjoyed it previously in the past, but it's been a while since I've watched it. Unless, of course, as Paul was suggesting before we started recording, that he's indeed living through Groundhog Day and he's watched it every day for the last 2 years. In which case, obviously, I will be torturing him.
It's not just that. But I've heard you say that for the past 2 years as well. Every day.
See, when my day repeats, I'm on the bridge of the Enterprise and this ship with Kelsey Grammer comes, you know, through a space, you know, a distortion in space time continuum, and I die every day. So I don't know.
I travel back
off
in time in the TARDIS with the Doctor. I'm cool.
Did you say Doctor?
I did indeed.
Did you say Doctor? Because you know, there's like the announcement that the Doctor's getting a new companion,
Danny Pink,
being played by Samuel Anderson.
Now, when it says a school teacher for his occupation.
Yes. It seems to be going back to the William Hartnell days where they're going to have two teachers on board.
Interesting.
Is Kara a teacher? I remember so little about her character.
Yeah, she was a teacher. And she was a teacher at, I think it was Cold Hill School, which was the original school in the 60s.
All right.
Hmm. So
I am a great fan of her character.
Is Doctor Who becoming pro-education? Because if they start referring to anything in the current curriculum, I will be most disappointed. Scove's really fudged that up.
I don't necessarily think that it's pro-education, but by the same token, it takes a very different tact to most other stuff. Because I think, I can't remember whether it was on Facebook or Memebase or something, there was like a description from the original. Well, from I think it was Stephen Moffat that basically said that he's an unusual hero because he doesn't resort to violence in any respect. He's always kind of thinking his way out of situations and, you know, making peace rather than killing and, you know, dominating.
True. But then you've seen his companions sort of take up arms instead, haven't you?
At times, yeah.
Hmm.
Do you know, for a moment, briefly, through my mind flashed the idea of having several more teachers on the show and turn it into Doctor Who teachers, partially resurrecting the Channel 4 series Teachers, in which the Doctor's companions are characters from that show.
You know what the interesting thing is? That what was it, James Corden?
Yes.
He's been in both Teachers and Doctor Who.
Doctor Who.
So that could actually work.
Meanwhile,
I don't want to hold that against Doctor Who.
Oh, is it Andrew Lincoln?
Yes.
Yeah, if we could have Andrew Lincoln also in this strange Doctor Who Teachers crossover, I would love to show it then to the Americans to just confuse them immensely. I believe that is what will happen. Just saying. Still not sure about the name, though. Danny Pink.
If I may inquire, did they specifically say assistant or companion? Because I just saw a mention of him as a recurring character in several episodes.
Mentioned in this one I saw as companion.
Mickey
started off as just sort of in a couple of episodes that became a full-fledged companion, didn't he?
What do you reckon is going to happen to Clara then? Is it going to be like a second, you know, companion? Or
I think it'd be the secondary system.
It seems to be going back to the way it was in the 60s with like more than one companion.
And 70s and 80s.
And 70s and 80s, yeah. You know, so they do always used to have two or three companions at a time, so it seems to be going back that way.
Yeah, that works a lot better.
Yeah.
Because you're not stuck with the situation, oh, look, Doctor lands on planet, ooh, isn't that weird, goes off to investigate it, companion gets, you know, falls down a slope, gets kidnapped, transported, eaten by a giant space whale.
Lassie finds Doctor. Woof, 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 woof.
Yeah. So you've got far more flexibility with that.
With two companions, definitely.
I would still like to see Clara go, though. I just don't like her. I may have mentioned this.
Yeah,
you have a few times.
Yeah. What I want, though, what I really, really, really want is for somebody to make a Mr. Pink joke. And obviously I want it to wash over the heads of all the children that may be watching at that point. But I want all the adults to obviously chuckle at that point.
Can you just imagine if he accidentally loses an ear? Somehow.
Oh, crikey.
So, well, if you know, if they're walking along in the line and there's three of them, someone will be stuck in the middle.
Okay, I'm even on to probably some of the news that I really wanted us to discuss a bit more in depth. So Irrational Games is closing its doors.
Yes.
That's the sound of my heart breaking.
Mm. Is it really the sound of your heart breaking? I just need to be sure.
It's quite possibly.
Okay.
Because I've replayed all the Bioshocks several times.
But, I mean, I it's not due to, you know, lack of profit.
No,
really, is it?
That was
Thing, because on the statement he gave, it seemed to be either he was going to leave and form a startup.
Yeah.
Or 2K said, well, why don't you do pretty much the same thing here?
Mm.
Now, to me, reading between the lines, I may be getting this completely wrong, but it sounded like either Irrational was going to get, you know, completely killed off if he left.
Mm.
Or it was, well, you can do it here, but we're still going to fire most of the staff.
Achiever Way is a bit harsh.
It sounds very weird to me that there wasn't a they can all continue going as they were.
Yeah.
And it was either he buggers off, you know, and does a startup with a small amount of people, or he stays on with only a small amount of people. It's weird.
We don't know what kind of agreements they may have previously entered to in terms of rights for IP, and perhaps the company can't use its existing IP if there's not certain members within the company.
Yeah, I would love to know what the hell's going on, because, you know, the general reaction was, you know, why are you shutting down Irrational? And, or, you know, why are you getting rid of so many other people? And I'm thinking, maybe he doesn't have much of a choice. It's one or the other.
He does seem to have been shoved into the corner like a tiger.
Can I just ask, Retro, because you've read upon, presumably, the, you know, kind of, well, everything and anything to do with Bioshock. Bioshock and Infinite. It felt to me when I was watching Emily play some of the games that maybe there were certain ideas, like, say, for example, delving more into, you know, the kind of parallel between, was it Olympia? Not Olympia.
Columbia.
Columbia, that's one. And Rapture.
Yeah.
I mean, do you reckon anything was kind of taken out of Levine's control at all when it come to that?
I'm not sure, because there's a whole situation with Bioshock 2, which he made clear, you know, he didn't want another studio to do, but, you know, Take-Two went ahead and did it anyway. There's no reference to Bioshock 2 anywhere, and, well, Bioshock, as in the original Bioshock, does appear, Rapture does appear in Bioshock Infinite. That's not a spoiler.
Well, yeah, that's like the towards the end.
Obviously,
yeah.
There's the DLC.
Mm. Yeah, the DLC definitely delves into it more. And the whole concept behind Bioshock seems to be, if you have ideology mixed with the technology, you know, what, where can it go and what can go wrong with it? Because you had Comstock, who was, you know, he got, technology out of its time, and, you know, went to, you know, along with Columbia, and it's the whole thing, oh, yeah, isn't he so moral?
Yeah.
And yet, look at what the world was like. And, you know, the whole thing of capitalism run rampant in Rapture. Mm. So, I would have loved to have seen, I mean, the Take-Two have said, haven't they, that there are still more possibilities and more worlds to look at in the Bioshock universe.
Yep.
So I just hope Levine has got something to do with it. And I would love to know what the hell is going on, because I trust him to do it. I'm not sure if I trust other people.
It is his baby, isn't it?
Yeah, well, because after all, he did System Shock.
Hmm. Yeah.
In the ye old PC days.
I just want to say, I was quite happy with Bioshock 2.
I liked it. It's definitely not, because it gets sort of, you know, shoved to one side, because I think it starts off weak and then, you know, rapidly gains, and it's very good. And the Minerva's Den DLC is, you know, an excellent Bioshock story in itself.
Mm.
And it's rare these days in that it was single-player DLC for a shooter. So I definitely approved of that. But, I liked it. It's just, he seems to have more of a variety in mind.
I think my question would be, does this mean the end for the Bioshock series?
I hope not. I would much prefer Levine being in, you know, control.
Mm.
At the same time, I suppose, because some people have kind of looked at how Bioshock, unlike perhaps other game series, though perhaps other game series should follow suit, in its releases are not every year or every other year. You know, there's a fair few years between them. And I think that is partially what makes people crave new installments from the franchise.
Yeah, because it's not, oh, what are they going to do with this year's?
Yeah.
It's, are they working on it? And when's it coming out?
But the problem being that, of course, the astronomical costs that AAA now seems to bring in, if you're developing a game that's going to take... I mean, did Infinite take something... One of the Bioshocks took something like 6 years, I think, to develop.
That sounds about right, because they were all long gestation, which is why Bioshock 2, you know, with it being a completely different studio...
Yeah.
That was... Yeah.
But then this obviously creates problems because, of course, there's no, like, cash flow coming in, really. Like, the studio at that point isn't generating cash because everyone's working on that, but it's for a really long time.
Yeah.
So I suppose it basically, in some ways, it makes it more expensive, but you end up with a very high quality product at the end of it, in theory.
Yeah.
And perhaps, you know, maybe somebody at Take-Two was like, I mean, we can't really sustain this model anymore if you can't push out stuff with this size studio on a more frequent basis.
Well, that's what they were gunning for when they did Bioshock 2, and yeah. That didn't sell as well as, you know, they wanted it to. But if you look back at a lot of the stuff that they were saying before Bioshock 2 was released, and around the release, they seemed to be, you know, very interested in the idea of making it a franchise.
Yeah, they do. Yeah,
oh, I remember. An ongoing multi-game franchise, and Levine wasn't that happy.
That's the problem nowadays, isn't it? Sorry, it's the problem nowadays.
Oh yeah,
in my opinion,
it's
just everything. They all prefer quantity over quality at the moment. They seem to, certainly for the bigger studios, they want to ram it down your throats every year.
Yeah, and we like games, yes. But if you can just actually, you know, sit down and wait until they're bloody finished.
Yes, good quality games is what I like.
I think seeing what's happened with the Assassin's Creed series over the years, while people absolutely adore it, I don't think it's as good as it could be due to the frequency of release.
I'm still chomping at the bit to play Black Flag, but God, Assassin's Creed 3 is really...
See, I quite like that. I still quite enjoy that.
I think if it clicks with you, great, but it just...
Just another example, of course, though, is like something like the Call of Duty franchise as well.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to say, out of all the yearly franchises, I have to say my favourite by far is Assassin's Creed. Call of Duty, I'm just there.
Call of Duties, I've played one or two, and
I think with each, because they rarely manage to improve the actual sort of mechanics of the whole thing, and because they're obviously trying to push them out so quickly, there's no real development or sort of evolution in their narrative. In fact, because they've been bringing them so close together and so frequent, I really loved Call of Duty 4. I could just about handle
Modern Warfare.
Yeah, Modern Warfare. Yeah.
I liked Modern Warfare. It was a good game.
The Modern Warfare trilogy had quite a nice little story going through it all.
But I do think after 2, though, because they upped the release schedule, that between obviously it's still different sort of like devs working on it, but at the same time you've still got a degree of quality control involved in making sure that all the narrative and everything is fine, and if you're releasing stuff that frequently, it's something that's going to get overlooked. I mean, look at film franchises.
Yep.
Yeah.
That release too soon, sort of each iteration, as in, like, nobody bothers to actually spend some time checking that the script's good. That's something I think that happens in games as well.
I think for me, Call of Duty has and always will be, since probably Modern Warfare 4. Always been about the multiplayer. It's always been, mates have got it, they're playing online, they're egging me on to play online with them, so I end up waiting until it drops in price, going out, buying it, and then playing online for a while.
It might as well just be, if it was just for the multiplayer, then they might as well just do something that you can download updates for all the time.
I'm kind of surprised they haven't done that.
Yeah. I'm kind of surprised they haven't done that with some of the sports games.
Yeah.
That's just because they realise that they can charge another £40.
Or you could instead do, because that thing is that that's not necessarily guaranteed income. You could reach a point with stuff like any of this where it's like, why don't you just have a subscription service that releases updates? The problem being that if you're relying on day one sales and all first week sales and all that, that isn't necessarily guaranteed income. Whereas at least if you've got subscribers, you've got a projection for income.
Just thinking there, I've known one or two people. It's always in a friend of a friend because, as you know, I'm massively into my sports. I frequently watch the sportings on TV, you know, when they're sporting their sports and, you know, with sport ball. And all that sports. But there seem to be some people who they will just buy, you know, one or two sports games a year. You know, they will buy that year's FIFA. They will buy that year's NFL.
Yeah.
And then they will play that. And then, the new one's come out. Oh, that's the next one I'll buy.
It doesn't help when somebody like EA then goes and closes down like the servers for the previous games quite soon.
That annoys the hell out of me.
Yeah, because it's like you can always tell when that's kind of happened because suddenly there's a surge of secondhand copies of the other games because no one can play them online with friends anymore.
Which coincidentally, Sony have just done with. They're going to be closing down the servers for Gran Turismo 5.
Really?
Yep, and they'll be taking down all the DLC from the store.
Oh.
So if you don't have it, when they close it down, I think in the next month or so, then tough.
Wow.
But I think sports games are a little bit of an anomaly, and I would count Call of Duty as that, because I think it's, cyber sport. type of thing where you should just probably have a subscription on it, update it, because so many of the people, if you want to do a boxed product that's got a better single player, then I might play that, but there are so many people who just buy it just to get the latest version of the multiplayer.
Yeah, which is what I pretty much do. Then I'll end up to that.
That's fine, but I think it's just a little bit strange that all games are classed as a boxed product thing.
Yeah.
When they don't need to be, because you've got, the BioShock series, which are the games come out when there's the game ready. Not it has to come out in September, October, November. Mm-hmm. Every year. And so you've got, two teams working on it. Each one with 2 years to do their game.
Yeah.
But they're sort of feeding off each other with engine updates and all these kinds of things. And it's all just seen as one, it's Call of Duty. That's all it, people play Call of Duty. They don't specifically play, like Call of Duty, Black Ops 2. But it just, they might have that because it's the latest, game or whatever, but, they're not specifically, oh yeah, I really love that. I absolutely hate Modern Warfare. Blops is, the one for me. It's like, no, they'll just go for the latest one.
Yeah. Bringing this back to Irrational for the moment, before I move us on properly, I do feel that, I feel a bit of concern as to whether or not Levine will be able to achieve what he previously did with a smaller, more entrepreneurial endeavour.
As he termed it, yeah.
And I do wonder what kind of games he's hoping to make. I mean, I suppose if you've got a smaller setup or something that's a bit less well-funded, you can still end up with things like Spec Ops The Line.
Yeah.
It's possible. But I mean, and that's like a mid-range game, at least in terms of like the spend.
Oh, it's possible to do big-ish games with a smallish team, especially with the technology we have now. If you use more, sparing work and generation. I mean, there are a few indie games that are coming out that look really nice, and they've only got a few people working on it. But it just depends. As you say, whether they'd be able to get a similar experience out of such a small team.
Just as long as he doesn't start experimenting with severely different new ways to play games.
Yeah. I've got an idea. All right, exclusive. We know what the first game will be from, Slim Down Irrational. Floppy Songbird.
Oh. Can you hurt yourself?
You just brought a tear to my eye with that one.
Pretty, yeah,
please. It's oh Jesus.
Okay, I'm gonna.
I did that to myself, didn't
I? Yeah,
you did.
I'm moving us on for the sake of humanity. Guardians of the Galaxy first full proper trailer thing.
Yay!
Was released last week.
And it looks bloody awesome.
And it does look.
Every raccoon thing.
Looks very fabulous, but one thing that family members of one of the co-creators of Rocket Raccoon are hoping is that, perhaps the film's sort of imminent release this year will draw attention to the plight of writer Bill Mantlo, who co-created Rocket Raccoon with
Keith. Yeah, I didn't know any of this.
Yeah, this is the second artist, or second comics creator that I've heard being in this sort of situation. So for those of you who don't know, Rocket's co-creator Bill Mantlo was in a coma for many years after being in a car accident. This is sometime, I think, in the late 80s or before the mid-90s or something like that. And when he finally woke up, he was found to be severely disabled. So obviously, as a result, his family has a lot of medical bills, and some of it because they're in the US. You know, so they...
And the American health system is screwed up.
So they've been, you know, scraping by and whatnot. And unfortunately, like so many characters that have been created across either, you know, Marvel or DC, the kind of contract he signed when creating Rocket Raccoon meant that he'd never see a dime of royalties. Unfortunately.
Which is bollocks, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Well, it's what happened with... That's why you've got people arguing over, like, Superman and Batman and, you know, and everything and whoever. It's because the contracts that were put on when the characters were created... I mean, I'm not sure how and whether or not this practice still continues today. But I would love to see almost like a like an ethical sticker on, like, comics that are, like, you know, like, if somebody's created... If it's, like, a new character or something, is like, some kind of ethics of, like, you know, the royalties are being paid.
Yeah, like, it's just, we, comic, you know, we are not bastards. Yeah. Sticker.
But anyway, there's currently a mix of fundraising going on, to obviously, because of, obviously, they can, you know, draw attention to the creator now because of the trailer coming out, in order to help the family with the medical bills. There's also people calling for Disney to give Mantlo's family some of the film's earnings to help with his medical costs.
Which is fair enough.
It's unclear at the moment whether or not Disney would
consider it.
But let's just say that, say the film earns, like, well, certainly more than double its cost of production, then 1% of that would, you know, that'd be an amazing, amazing thing for that family to help sort out. Why I'd hate to think what the bills are like after, because it's been a really prolonged and protracted.
It must be horrendous, to be fair.
Do the medical bills generate interest on that as well?
I hate to think. I don't know.
I wouldn't put it past them.
Yeah.
No, I can't remember. Unfortunately, I'm not sure if he's still alive, but after what happened. But I do remember a couple of years ago, it was either the creator or one of the main people that's worked on the character Lobo for DC. He was involved in a hit and run. He was the victim, and he was severely hurt. I'm still not sure if he survived or whatever, but there was, like, appeals then for, you know, like, medical costs and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, there's no way for his family to sort of support that kind of thing. I mean, because let's face it, most, if not the majority of writers, artists, inkers, whatever, letterers, you know, colorists, they don't earn fantastic money from the work that they do, despite the sort of upsurge that's happening in comics at the moment in terms of, you know, I'm reading far more comics than I used to. By far.
You're solely creating that uplift.
Yeah, it's just me. Oh, and the Cornwall Graphic Novel Group.
Just you.
Just me? Oh, that's me. But, you know, it's just... It's kind of depressing when you think about it. Like, it's not a regular... You know, very few of these people work in-house. They're pretty much all freelance. So, I mean, if you look at somebody who's working over here, that means then that they don't have any set holiday. They've got to take care of their own national insurance, you know, maybe obviously their own pension and stuff like that, and
taxes
and everything. So on top of actually making sure they've got enough time to earn enough from what they do. And it's a timely process, especially depending on how detailed the work needs to be.
Yeah.
If you're on the drawing side, it can take... I don't know of anyone who works in comics on the creative side, or the production side, and lives in the lap of luxury. Don't think I've met anyone ever like that.
To be honest, I don't think anybody goes into the comics industry
expecting to make
a vast fortune, live in a mansion.
Except for the people that perhaps become the heads of the boards of the companies that own the big publishers.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
then I think then, you know, and they're not even the ones doing all the hard work. Anyway, going back to Guardians of the Galaxy overall, the trailer was looking quite spectacular.
The FX and it was nice. Amazing.
And it's looking like it's going to have a nice balance of humour.
Yes.
I know that, was it Karen Gillan?
Yes.
Yes.
Is meant to be in there somewhere.
That's a bad
She's
guy.
One of the villains, I think.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And, like, has no hair.
Yeah.
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 It's going to be an interesting one because I don't know the source material on that. So, I'm more interested in that than I am, you know, most of the other comic adaptations.
I'm hoping to read up before the film's released, and we've got plenty of time because I don't think it's out till August.
I was going to say, I've never actually read one of the Guardians of the Galaxy books yet, but I will probably read a couple before going.
I was just thinking, I think they need to go back to the drawing board because the way comics are going, I mean, you could argue that, you know, the comics themselves, you know, never made much money. You know, there was a comics industry, you know, even at its height, you know, the only ones it made money for were, you know, as you said, the studio heads. And that was more of a cumulative thing. So all these people who were inventing characters and, you know, artwork and stories and, you know, intellectual property.
Mm. Yeah.
For them to exploit further in the future, you know, weren't going to get paid much anyway because it was shit, but it was the nature of the industry. And thankfully, you know, that did get shook up a little bit.
Yeah.
In the, you know, the 80s and 90s with, you know, Image and, you know things like that.
Of course.
Yeah. So there's all that, but the way all these big movies are coming out now and their comic book adaptations, they have to look at them more as these people created the IP. Almost they need, to be elevated. They need to be elevated full stop, but, you know, they need to just have more recognition and more control over and more income from, you know, what's going on with these things, because without them, these things wouldn't exist and these companies wouldn't be making, you know, the huge expensive movies and getting, even huger, more expensive profits coming back from it. So it's like, come on, you know, do the decent thing.
I can't see anything really changing on that front, though.
No, I can't see anything changing, but it would be nice.
Yeah. It would be nice, wouldn't it? But moral, money talks.
You know, just you know, actually, you know, be a human.
Maybe we do need a fair trade label for comics, but I suspect the only ones that would be able to do that are the far smaller publishers, where the actual internal team is quite sort of cut down and agile. Like, but I would say to somebody like Top Cow's got a huge number of employees.
But by the same token, what that would mean is that writers and, you know, artists are more likely to go for those ones because they have better deals, which means that those smaller publishers be producing better content and get bigger by themselves, aren't they?
The advantage, anyway, of going with a smaller publisher is you're more likely to be working on your own creator-owned project.
Yeah.
Which means that you can obviously then negotiate for royalties. The only issue for, like, writing and creating for somebody like Marvel is that while you may create perhaps a particular storyline that is unique, and then, I mean, that's the thing, maybe storylines, like if there's particular identifying features that are kind of unique, maybe, because obviously these sort of things then get brought into the movies, so somebody might have written something in a comic 5 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Like what happened with Extremis, say, in Iron Man 3, and, you know, whether or not it's unlikely they really got any royalties from having come up with that concept, you know. I'm going to move us on now to our last news story for the week. And we've got, there's a lot of ladies playing The Last of Us. I was one of them, but it was not perhaps as willingly as perhaps was hoped by Paul when he gifted me my Christmas present.
Willingly. Like, no, you willingly played it. You didn't enjoy it.
I am thinking, was it a little bit like the re-education scene in Clockwork Orange?
Some nights it felt like it.
You know, sort of, you know, strapped down and someone moistening your eyeballs with a pipette as you're forced to, you know,
play through it. Hands stuck to the controller.
That's exactly how it was when Emily was playing. Exactly how it was. I was the one
Your Christmases are weird.
This was according to figures from Naughty Dog that 40% of The Last of Us audience is lady femaleness. Basically, director Bruce Straley thinks that having Ellie as a protagonist helped achieve this figure. Yeah. Ellie. Yeah.
Still not played it.
Nope. I'm still trying to get time to play it. I've got it now.
She's not my favourite female character in that game. By a long shot. In fact, actually, considering that the game is an 18 rating, considering the character of Ellie is under the age of 18, and consider the fact that most people tend to identify with characters who are either the same age as themselves or a bit older.
Yeah.
The idea that Ellie is the draw for female female players is a bit ridiculous.
I'm not sure about the, you know, identifying as characters older. As I think it, you know, depends how young you are. Speaking as an old fart.
This is true.
Well, put it this way, you would need to be. For instance, you could probably deal once you're an adult. It would be easy to identify with adult characters than child characters, especially if the childhood depicted is far different than your own.
Yeah.
Which, of course, Ellie's very much is. Because she's pretty much lived, you know.
After the apocalypse of whatever it is.
Yeah.
That's all she knows. I can't remember her name. I want to remember her name. Is it Tess or Jess? Gosh, darn it.
We can't help you with this.
The other main female character that's at the beginning of the game. She was actually my favourite. And
does she get killed off?
I can't be sorry.
That's
a good point. That's a good point. Sorry.
Yeah.
Calm yourself down there.
Plans for the Apes is Earth.
I've yet to decide whether or not I want to replay the game and obviously play the DLC that came out recently where you play as Ellie.
I just want to play it because I normally really like Naughty Dog stuff. Uncharted is a sublime franchise.
I tried watching Paul play the first Uncharted recently.
I have to say it felt quite repetitive.
And
you know why?
Come on.
Bloody repetitive.
Do you know what? They need to get over this whole waves of enemies thing.
Yeah.
And designing...
Nathan Drake, super soldier, and mass killer.
I mean, if you think about it, Uncharted, it's like...
Treasure Hunter as well, don't forget.
Uncharted's a fair few years old now. The Last of Us is obviously their most recent game. Guess what? Both, it's pretty obvious when you're walking into a kill zone.
Oh. And there's lots of cover and everything's quiet.
But this isn't going to last. Of course it's not going to last. It's never going to last. And that was... At some point, I will probably write some crazy in-depth article about why I didn't like The Last of Us, as I did for Bioshock Infinite, or at least the stuff that kind of gave me issue.
Seriously, though, Uncharted 2 is a lot better than Uncharted, so you've got to play that.
Right. It does make me wonder what the statistics on Beyond Two Souls would be, though.
That was a female character I could identify with far more readily.
And how many of the players actually thought it was an actual game and not just a collection of QuickTime events like David Cage swore blind it wasn't?
It did feel a lot like an interactive movie.
Yeah, and again, you know why? Because it bloody was.
I've not played it.
I played the demo at Eurogamer Expo, and it was just... Yeah, this is feeling a hell of a lot like what I played of Heavy Rain, which again felt like an interactive movie.
I love that game.
I'm not saying it's bad, it's just...
No, I know what you mean, it was a bit...
He makes a very specific type of... Game-esque thing.
It is more about the story with David Cage, isn't it?
Mind you, I did feel with like Beyond Two Souls, like, I was kind of there. You know, like, I was the character. I didn't feel that there wasn't a huge dissonance to myself.
Yeah.
And was it Jodie? I'm bad with Blue names of real people. Trying to remember the names of fictional people is hard.
On a more serious note, though, with Heavy Rain, the quick time events, I can see where you're coming from. But the actual move with Heavy Rain, that game is so suited to move. It's probably the only game I've really enjoyed playing with move because of that.
I've not actually tried it with move. I haven't tried it. We've got it to play.
It feels a lot more natural.
Okay.
I think I'd... did I mention I'd tried playing Bioshock Infinite with the Move controller?
No. I tried playing Killzone 3 with it. That was interesting.
Yeah, I've got Killzone 3. I've not played it with Move. But yeah, I thought, well, you know, right, if I'm going to play through it, you know, again, because, you know, I was... I like the game, so, you know, use it as a bit of a... stress relief. So, you know, why not? I've got the game again because it was on PlayStation Plus. I might as well play it. Set up move, everything like that, calibrated it. It's like, wow, the Wiimote is better.
Really?
Yeah, I just could not get it working properly. And it's like, no, the Wiimote works a lot better, you know, in like Metroid Prime and such. It kept drifting and I kept having to go into the options to calibrate it.
We've actually got Metroid Prime Trilogy.
It's actually quite hard to get hold of.
Yeah, it is very hard. But the controls of the third game. It works perfectly with the other two games as well.
I want to move us on now to a final bit for the show where we talk about resurrected television.
Yay! It lives!
Not rebooted. Not reinterpreted.
Not tomorrow, people, then.
Not reimagined. No, definitely not tomorrow, people. Definitely not.
Are you sure?
Very sure. I'm talking about television that's been resurrected and brought back to televisual life.
You mean like Knight Rider?
No.
Oh, Jesus.
And I'm trying to think now of all the reboots out there. And I'm drawing a blank.
Like Doctor Who?
That's not a reboot.
Technically, there's quite a lot at the moment. Stuff like Hannibal. Bates
Motel.
There's Sleepy Hollow. So there's a lot of film ones that have been reimagined.
But television series...
You could argue that Next Generation was not a reboot. Star Trek Next Generation.
Yeah. Mm. Mm. But I'm talking about the continuation of TV shows after we thought they were dead and gone and never coming back. Like Doctor Who.
Yay!
Futurama.
Yes.
Family Guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Arrested Development. And then stuff.
So, yeah. Yay?
Yeah, and then stuff that's sort of coming out soon, like, because the new miniseries 24 is coming soon.
Yes.
This weekend, NBC announced that Heroes Reborn is coming in 2015, which will be a 13-episode miniseries.
Yay!
I thought that was a curious description of it.
Yeah.
And then it was hinted at last week that perhaps there's a chance, just a chance, for a Farscape TV movie, which continues on from what assumes where the TV series left off.
Peacekeeper Wars.
Yeah. As opposed to one assumes where the comics are, actually, at this point, because they have continued the seasons in comic book form. So, yeah.
I would be curious.
That would be quite cool.
But I want to talk about the things that have definitely come back.
Yes.
And how do we think we've done? And obviously there's those first four examples, Futurama, Family Guy, and Arrested Development.
Yeah, well, Doctor Who... Obviously, I think it, because it wasn't like an hour, almost an hour long episodes like originally.
No, 25 minutes.
Not even up till the,
It was 25 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. So there was a major format change for that as well, which was
quite welcome, to be honest, with the way they did some of the, I've said before about the, terrible cliffhangers that they had to put at the end of every episode.
Yeah. I do remember watching, a couple of the older Doctor Who episodes, when my dad bought, just kind of random Doctor Who DVDs one time, and it was like, this is coming quite quickly, and why don't they just stick them into, blocks, like hour-long blocks?
They did try and cram a lot into the time, didn't they?
Mm.
Which was a shame.
It's just everything had to lead up to this big crescendo, and then most of the time it would just be,
But yeah. I think part of the other thing with Doctor Who is because it was such a wide time gap between, the original series and the new series. Ooh, obviously, there's a lot of kind of techniques that have been kind of improved that, like CG and whatnot.
They really? Didn't have that.
that's obviously, kind of a big factor.
Or sometimes script writing for screen. Though obviously, it's questionable for some whether or not Davies and Moffat have, managed to comprehend script writing anytime soon. I have no personal
still a big fan of Moffat in all of his works.
Yes, definitely.
I think there are issues. There are things that irritated me more and more as the series has gone on. But
has the resurrection of Who been successful though?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I think to a certain extent because, I don't know what it was like in its time, but there's a certain sense of nostalgia for some people with Doctor Who, whereas now, we had a blooming hour long program to say who the new Doctor is.
Yeah,
That's how big it's got.
That's called milking the cow.
Milking the doctor.
Weird, because I remember when it was the, filmed on a budget at £2.50 in a packet of fags, crappy thing that they just, pushed into the children's schedule.
Bobbling like Blue Peter.
It couldn't have been worse than Blake 7. Come on. Oh, that reminds me of another series that we haven't got listed.
So,
Red Dwarf.
I was going to raise that myself, you sod.
Sorry.
Because, Red Dwarf 10.
Retroid, would you like to talk about Red Dwarf 10 for a moment?
It was... it was brought back by Dave, wasn't it?
Yes.
The TV channel, for anyone who isn't in the UK, we have a TV channel called Dave, because we do.
Yeah.
Because, we just... do. And most of the time they just show stuff from BBC and a few is it entirely BBC thinking there?
No, they've got a couple of things from some of the sort of more international channels, like Man vs. Food is from the Travel Channel in the US.
True, yes, they do.
Storage Hunters. And at one point they were showing Spaced, which was originally on Channel 4.
Yes, that's very true. So,
in America, it got shown on BBC America, I believe. Yeah.
And they've got Suits as well now.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
So they originally brought back Red Dwarf because the BBC weren't interested in doing any more for some stupid reason. It's something that made you money, and the people involved come back to you and say, could we make some more?
We all know why. It's because the head of BBC hates sci-fi.
Well, most of the upper echelons despise sci-fi,
Which is weird when Doctor Who is one of their top exports.
Mm. Yeah.
But there was a reason why Doctor Who was, ran into the ground and cancelled in the first place, and that's because they hated sci-fi. But so they brought Red Dwarf back for a 3-episode story, which
wasn't it?
Yeah,
I thought was fairly bad.
I fell asleep for most of that.
It had lots of things wrong with it.
I concur.
But it was successful for them, mostly because it seemed to be that they just kept it chucking it at the screen because they'd paid for it. So it's like, we're going to get our bloody money's worth out of this. Watch it again. And so they, a year or so later, it was a 4-6 episode.
I think it was a bit more
run,
than
that,
wasn't it? It was about
two or three
years. Yeah, it was a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't sort of, immediately after. But they brought it back for a proper numbered series.
Hmm.
And by and large, I thought it worked reasonably well.
It did,
yeah.
All things considered, which was, you know, everyone's, you know, aged about 20 years.
Yeah.
Including the writers. So, you know, I thought it worked reasonably well. I thought it worked a hell of a lot better than the, you know, the last series or so of the, you know, original run.
Yes.
Well, you mean Series 7 and 8?
Yeah.
Yeah, I quite like Series 7 and 8, to be honest.
No,
well, that's when they were quite in the minority there. Sorry?
Was that the one where they were back on Red Dwarf?
And all the cabin crew were back.
That was Series 8, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was fairly terrible.
Oh, no, it had its moments.
But...
No.
It was fairly terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, it was not a patch on series 5 and 6. In my opinion, 5 and 6 were probably its better seasons.
Oh, Quarantine.
Brilliant. I think 1 and 2 were probably, you know, where it was at its purest, and it was just, you know, proper character interaction.
Hmm. Yeah.
And then it sort of changed format.
Yeah, so it got more sci-fi-ish.
It was more sort of let's bring external things in, and that was fine. But I just liked the way the characters pretty much you know, they all hated each other in different ways.
Mm. I like the fact that humans in the Red Dwarf universe are like the only naturally evolved life form. They've got
it's basically
Gelfs which is genetically engineered life forms and whatnot. And they've got simulants.
Everything
and,
is from Earth,
in one
way or another.
Which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, that was an interesting sci-fi idea that, you know, they were in a dead galaxy, pretty much. And the only thing was, well, it's been 3 million years since humanity, you know, left Earth, and this is what has been left behind. Yeah, by and large, I thought that was a successful rebirth.
Yeah. I mean, Red Dwarf's always been quite... not necessarily small, but you know, it's been a cult classic. So
yeah, so it, you know, it's allowed
for,
them
for
to
something
just do
for something of it. You know, the show of its size to come back, I think it was actually quite respectable.
Yes.
Yeah, I was quite happy with the you know, Red Dwarf 10.
Me, my Family Guy. Oh.
Yeah. Well, when it was like Series 3, it wasn't too bad, and then I think it was. Pretty much purely down to DVD sales that actually got it brought back.
Yeah.
But then they decided to up the controversial at that point.
Yeah.
And the upping of the controversial, for me, didn't have much of a positive effect.
Well, that's because it became the core of it.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't necessarily about making people laugh or telling funny jokes anymore. It was about actively going out and, hey, let's just slag off this thing.
True.
It's the whole not big, not clever.
I kind of know, but the other F, though, Futurama, I think it was good that it came back, but I'm not actually that fond of the TV movies.
I think that's because, in the end, they felt a little bit too long.
Yeah.
You know, even though they were basically like four episodes stuck together, each movie was, and there were four of them, so they kind of, between them, they made a series by themselves.
Yeah, which was fine, but sometimes the stories and the concepts they were coming up with, it didn't really need a full movie.
Yeah.
So it doesn't need to be that long. Don't make it that long. Stop making it that long.
It felt at times a little bit uncomfortable to watch.
It was a bit weird.
I'm not sure why.
I was a big fan of Futurama up until the point they cancelled it.
Hmm.
And then, you know, when it came back, the TV movies were a little bit, I'm not entirely sure why I'm not liking these, you know, as much. And then when they brought back the actual series, I was watching some of the episodes of those. And rather than, ooh, I've got a new episode of Futurama to watch, I was, well, I've got three of these now. I should really watch an episode of Futurama.
Hmm.
And that's, yeah, So I was disappointed when it came back. So it could well have, you know, went off to a rollicking success simply because I sort of, you know, fell off watching it.
Well, to be honest, I quite enjoyed, like, Series 5. I don't think I've picked up Series 6 yet, though.
Hmm.
Or, you know, 7 or... And they've kind of re-cancelled it now, haven't they?
Yeah, been... It's been announced that there's an end.
But I do feel like there is something different about the series after they, you know, kind of brought it back.
Yeah, whether some of the people behind the scenes didn't come back or, you know, they were busy.
I think they could get away with more because they weren't on Fox. I think that's what it was.
Yeah.
To be honest. So everything seemed a bit more raunchy and...
On the nose.
Well, not necessarily on the nose, but...
Just so it wasn't reined in, the creativity was, they didn't have to be as inventive.
Well, I suppose in a way.
Yeah, I think that can sometimes be a little bit of a problem. I wasn't sure if it was that or whether it was just, it just seemed more tired. It seemed more like The Simpsons as it is now.
Now that's a scary thought.
Yeah, whereas it used to be very fresh. And coming up with all sorts, and you know, very
there
tightly
again,
written.
Saying that, when Futurama was originally around, I don't think there was as much acceptance for sci-fi and geek culture. So maybe it's just become a little bit more acceptable.
I think it has, simply because there's, you know, we're taking over slowly.
It does feel like that at times.
No, it doesn't. But it feels more like it did.
I think TV series, sci-fi TV series, and you know, kind of the general kind of geek type of series is becoming more and more in the mainstream. I mean, look at S.H.I.E.L.D. You know, Marvel films. Those come from comic book origins. You know, those are people wearing, you know, kind of. I don't know, spandex and whatnot.
Yeah, so that kind of thing is becoming, you know, more of an acceptable thing we get. You know, it's becoming less restricted.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's all good. But I think that in a way is a reason why some series, you know, are coming back.
Yeah.
So it's. I'd like to think it's because the people who are involved are wanting to do more with them, rather than the TV companies are thinking, "Hey, the geek dollar. We haven't invested, you know, too much in that. We've got this IP that we can exploit." And various other things that I just like them to stop doing.
I don't know, the fact that we haven't re-got Buffy is probably a good sign.
Yeah,
that it's not necessarily the TV networks.
I would like to think that. I'm not entirely sure if Buffy would work if it was redone.
Well, not redone, but if it was continued. If it was brought back, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, with what they did with the comics and everything, it could be very tricky. But
I was saying that if anybody is listening, we would like to have another season of Angel with Spike and that to see what the fuck actually happened.
Those were in comic book form as well.
I'd like to see another season of Angel, but without Angel.
Okay.
See, he was always the most boring character. Also, it would make me very sad face because we no longer have Lorne.
Yes, that's very true.
Yes.
And he was ace.
Lorne was cool.
If anyone... doesn't know, the actor who played Lorne in the TV series unfortunately died of, was it a heart problem?
Mm-hmm. It was complications from an infection that he had.
Yeah, and it's which was very sad because he wasn't that old. So,
bless him.
Yeah. He was ace.
But yeah, anyway, another one is Arrested Development. That's kind of coming off sci-fi land quite a bit there.
Yeah, that is quite un-sci-fi. Because my wife and I would, you know, caught episodes of Arrested Development when it was on TV, but it was always so sort of scattergun when it was shown, you know, when we'd catch it, because it always seemed to be in the early hours of the morning. We had absolutely no idea where we were, and we kept missing it. So, you know, that was a problem. But when, you know, Netflix got the rights, we sat down and we watched, you know, we gorged on Arrested Development on Netflix just in time for the new Netflix-created series of it to be available. And that was a little bit of a clash.
A clash?
Yeah, because we really enjoyed the series up until that point, and then it, we had to sort of slog through the new series.
Really?
Yeah. It felt quite different, and I think the thing there was that the original format was, it was obviously showing, you know, weekly. Whereas this one, this new series was designed to be, you know, watched pretty much all in one. And once we got about, you know, through three quarters of the way through, you know, the Netflix-funded series, it got a lot better because it all worked together. But yeah, I know they're doing a new, they're doing another season, aren't they, of Arrested Development? I think. Am I going mad? Did I just hallucinate that?
I'm not sure.
I believe Netflix are.
Yeah. Oh, good. And I hope the you know, the crew on that take it more of a, you know, a learning experience with what they did with, you know, the new season. So, you know, when they're doing the next one, I hope they make it, you know, more so you can view it more in isolation. Because it just seemed to be all over the bloody place. And we were watching it. And yeah, I did enjoy it. And, you know, I'm glad I watched it. I definitely didn't think it was a waste of my time. Torchwood. But...
Oi!
What? I may have mentioned. So yeah, I'm not a fan of...
I've still got to get the... last one of that. Torchwood.
That was, what was the Americanized one.
Miracle Day, that's the one.
Yeah.
Is that memorable? I struggle to think of its title.
Yeah, because people stopped dying because giant arse cleft.
Sorry, what? Giant arse cleft.
If you recall, there was a giant arse cleft, and that was why people stopped dying in Miracle Day.
Oh, right, that from, weird hole through the planet, you mean?
Yeah, because it was... Okay. There's a hole in the planet that stops people dying. Why? Because.
It does.
Because it does. That's what the giant arse cleft does. I said, okay, yeah, whatever. I don't care. But yeah, Arrested Development, I'm looking forward to the new season, but I regarded that as a far less successful reboot. Just because they changed the format a bit much. You know, a bit too much. It wasn't because it was bad or such. It was just, you know, a little bit too different when they, you know, redid it. It required a gorging rather than, you know.
Yeah.
It hadn't up until then. And I'll just say, you know, 24, I've still never seen.
It does make me wonder, though, because, I mean, if you think about it, you know, this whole gorging thing has happened with box sets.
Yeah.
You know, yes. And the episodes were obviously designed to be seen weekly. Now that they're starting to produce, you know, series that are designed to be gorged, is it working?
I see that's the thing. I think the best series to gorge on are ones which aren't designed to be gorged on. if you see what I mean. It's just... Yeah.
Well, saying that, House of Cards.
Yeah, yeah. I was just going to say, you know, obviously, just like, you know, anyone who, you know, likes their, you know, TV drama and has Netflix recently watched House of Cards. Now, House of Cards is a great example of that, where it can be gorged on, but I could see it being on TV weekly.
Yeah.
It's not the kind of series where you'd completely lose track of what, you know, what you're watching if you watched it weekly. It strikes me as it just happens to be put on Netflix, so you can watch it all at once.
Okay.
I've already said things like Arrested Development. We're going through Peep Show at the moment, and that works really well you know, gorging, but obviously I've seen episodes of that just as they were on TV.
Yeah.
And it worked, you know, equally well. I would like to think that they're not, you know, it's not an invitation for people to go out and make 12-hour films.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's got to be done with respect, still.
Yeah, it's got to be done as a proper series that people can actually sit down and watch. Just because you can sit down and watch it all in once doesn't mean that, you know, that's the kind of thing it has to come in as.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, all this talk about, you know, rebooting is obviously because of, you know, Farscape potentially having a TV movie and mini-series of Heroes Reborn, which I think is something that Heroes actually needed, because where it left off, it was, you know, I think the episode title, or, you know, chapter title was meant to be like a new world type thing where, you know, everybody knew about people with powers, which you know, obviously nowadays is not necessarily a new thing, but you know, even what, 3 years ago, the concept of, you know, sort of like superheroes going around and, you know, basically there being a lot of people with powers and the public not knowing about it, I think has been almost like a trope previously.
Yeah, people came up with it. Well, the first time I encountered that was stuff like X-Men.
Yes.
Hmm.
And they probably weren't the first. But yeah, it's kind of been, you know, every time you do a superhero thing now, that's almost, you know, how to approach it. So yeah, it's rapidly become a not fresh concept, and it I would like to say with Heroes, if, you know, if you bring it back, have a tighter control over it.
Yes,
because my God, did it ever wander all over the bloody shop!
I thought that was part of the beauty of it, to be honest. You know, the individual stories.
I watched the first season and after the second season, and then it just seemed to, every time I watched it, I seem to have missed bits of it and I lost interest then, because I just couldn't work out where it actually come from.
Even in the later season, it did have high points, like the one where Loki started off as a police officer and, you know, could get inside people's minds. Yeah.
Mm.
There was the excellent one, which it was an episode written by the creator of Pushing Daisies after he returned to the series.
Hmm.
And, you know, would it be okay to spoiler her?
Well, for which Heroes or Pushing Daisies?
Well, yeah, just Heroes, this one episode.
Okay,
yeah.
Where super fast, zippy, runny, fasty girl is, you know, going to die, or she is dying. And the entire episode is it Matt?
Matt Parkman, yeah.
Yeah, Matt, sort of zipping her around the world, and they're having, you know, the perfect day, just making her happy. And it turns out that, of course, none of it's actually happening. He's manipulating it in her head. So when she dies, you know, she'll die happy.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really well done, and it was a nice use of, you know, the superpowers.
Definitely.
So, you know, can we have more episodes that are interesting things done with it, rather than almost having, you know, full story arcs of stupid thing happening because stupid people don't know stupid thing is going on, and then turning around at the last moment and going, oh, hang on, that's quite stupid, isn't it?
Can I just ask, the whole Sila, Peter, and, oh, what's his name? Adrian Pastar's character.
Well, as in the British bloke who was a samurai?
No.
The two brothers.
Yeah, the two brothers. The Petrelli brothers and Sila. How did you feel about that? Because I thought that was incredibly fresh. You know, it's never, you know, kind of cropped up in a story ever before, as far as I can tell.
Well, them being brothers.
Well, not really. It's more the whole idea of somebody taking somebody else's identity and then getting their memory erased.
I thought that was interesting, but it kind of went on for too long with it. and didn't do where, you know, the kind of thing I was wondering if they were going to do with it. I just, you know, thought it was, oh, that's interesting. I like what they're doing there with, you know, Sila being trapped in Matt's mind.
Mm. Yeah.
And, you know, reprogramming and things like that. So, you know, that was a nice idea, but it just seemed to... Yeah. There just wasn't enough focus, especially in the later, you know, seasons, where, you know, I kept thinking, this could get really good. And then it just sort of petered out a little bit.
Okay, and can I just ask, just a very, very quick thing, what do you think about Farscape coming back?
If it does.
If it does.
Yeah. Yay!
So that's kind of an apprehensive yay.
Yeah. I mean, I liked the original series as it was a very pulpy sci-fi.
Mm.
That's why I think, you know, even in sci-fi where you've got, you know, people trapped on ships with aliens, it was very different.
Mm.
And it, you know, I say pulpy in that it had a bit of an element of, you know, because it is.
Yeah.
You know, why is that the way it is? Because it is.
It had its own distinct style, didn't it?
Yeah.
It sort of set it apart from what else was on telly at the time.
I think part of that is the Australian influence.
Yeah, I think that possibly was. And if we could, you know, if they do bring it back, and if it's, you know, if it's say a series or something like that, can we have less of the, oh, we're so clever, let's do something different with an episode? if you know precisely the ones I'm talking about. Like, let's do the cartoon episode.
Oh, no.
And he's like, let's not. Let's not do the cartoon episode. Let's never speak of the cartoon episode.
Well, I think that's all we've got time for this week, guys. So it's goodbye from...
It's goodnight from me, Paul Wood, Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's goodnight from me, Paul, a.k.a. OneArmed_Cookie on Twitter, and you can find me lurking around the game shop.
And it's goodnight from me, Paul Blur, and I'm on Twitter as Paul Blur.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter as EK6891. You can find Nerdassemble over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. We're also available on iTunes. We're on Twitter at Nerds Podcast, plus Facebook and Google Plus as Nerdassemble Podcast. Don't forget to check hexdementia.com for awesome shizzle. Good night.
Night.
Good night.
Good night.